Here's the story of how you can win a trip for two to LA to visit the iconic Brady Bunch house. Not only visit the home, but spend the day there exploring and brunching with members of the Brady Bunch cast. If you remember, Kristen, Michelle, and I had the time of our lives when we got to visit the home back in September. It was truly a magical experience. And now you can have an experience like that too, alongside cast members from the show. Simply visit thebradyexperience.com to enter the Brady Brunch sweepstakes. And from now through January 31st, PCPS listeners can get 4 entries for the price of 1. All you have to do is put PCPS in the add order note section of the shopping cart. And the goodness doesn't stop there. For every 10 purchases you make, you'll have the opportunity to tour the house on your very own. Just remember to put PCPS in the add order note section of your shopping cart. You can feel good knowing that a portion of your purchase goes to No Kid Hungry, a campaign to help end childhood hunger in America. So get those entries in and cross your fingers. Good luck, everybody.
But you guys, it looks like someone put Nellie Olson through like a Playboy bunny machine. Like
that's what
she
it
went
is.
In as yes. Nellie Olson and it yes. spit her out and she is supposed to be like serving drinks at the Playboy yes. bunny club.
She's it's a Playboy mansion at Christmas.
Hello world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the Big Wheel generation who really would like to be a Pepper too.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we're saving the Misfit Holiday Special, those one-and-done TV gems that scream Gen X, and one in particular that we have wanted to talk about for an entire year. I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
All right, so buckle up, everybody. We're going to hop into Santa's sleigh to revisit a few of the weird, wacky, and dare I say wonderful TV specials of our Gen X youth. And honestly, you guys, there were a lot of shows that could fall into this category. The 70s and 80s provided us with some of the oddest holiday programming. Crazy celebrity pairings, strange storylines, just downright weird stuff. And I wanted to chat about a few of those with you guys today. And one in particular that just might take the cake for the oddest Christmas special of them all. But just to give you a little flavor for at least some of the titles that were out there for some of these Christmas specials, just listen to this. We had specials like a claymation Christmas celebration featuring the California Raisins.
Oh, I remember that one. I totally remember that. Yeah. And I was like, have we really like elevated this commercial to its own
crazy,
show?
Right? Yes.
I know. Well, come on. We had the little toy figures, you know, that were yes. like almost the little Smurfs. Yes. The little rubbery figures.
Good yeah. for McDonald's.
That marketing advertising person yep. who ever came up with that whole campaign. There was the He-Man She-Ra, a Christmas special. Okay. Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas, oh, Alf's Special good. Christmas.
Always.
Christmas Comes to Pac-Land, featuring our friends, the Pac-Men.
Wait, like Pac-Man? Like Pac-Man, Pac-Man and Miss Pac-Man? Yeah.
Yes, oh it was God. A 1981 oh Christmas special. And like oh I God. Said in the earlier part of the introduction, many of these were one and done. So yeah. if you missed them that first go round, you might have missed them forever. Except now you can find them on YouTube.
Yeah, this but let's not forget how I think sometimes we tend to forget. The Pac-Man craze was real. I mean, there was a cereal that were shaped like
That's
little
right.
Pac-Man and stuff.
That's right.
So
That's right.
I think sometimes now we're like, Pac-Man, but it was
a phenomenon.
Really
yeah,
really
think
big
about
phenomenon,
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, one of those things of Gen X that just bonds us. I remember it as the big arcade game.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
It was in the vestibule at Applebaum's, the grocery store. It's the only video game I play.
You guys were the Pac-Man generation. Let's just, we need to
yes,
somehow,
we
need to
yes,
make a list of all this stuff. But that's,
we
a, that's
do.
A good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, 100%.
Okay. But first, we have to start, I think, by acknowledging there's one particular Christmas special that really pops into everyone's mind when we think of weird Christmas programming, and that's the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Friday, blast off to a galaxy far, far away. It's the Star Wars Holiday Special, starring all your Star Wars favorites. Will Chewbacca get home to his planet in time for the big Wookiee holiday celebration? Watch and...
Oh, yeah, that's going to get its own episode someday.
I think it... And well, it should.
It will.
And for so long, because it was so bad, it wasn't on. You couldn't find it. Like, talk about one and done. I mean, it was like deeply buried in the vaults of wherever. And you could not find it. After it came out, all of those cast members, because we're talking like Harrison Ford is on it, Mark Hamill, you know, everybody, Carrie Fisher, they like would not even acknowledge that they were in it. And if it ever came up in like an interview, they'd be like, I've never seen it. I don't know what you're talking about. So it was bad. It was bad. Mm-hmm. But interestingly enough, in 2008, the Paley Center for Media, they did a little survey asking people their favorite holiday special. And in an online poll, which allowed users to vote on five titles, beating A Charlie Brown Christmas at 34.6, How the Grinch Stole Christmas at 31.3, and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer at 28.4. You have the Star Wars Holiday Special coming in at number one with 59% of the vote.
What are you even talking about?
I know. I don't know who they actually surveyed for this 2008 survey, but yeah, I guess they're Star Wars fans or people, you know, those people that love to hate stuff. Like, it's so bad, again,
yes,
it's good.
Yes, that's for sure what it is. Yeah. Because it has a cult following. It certainly has a cult following. You can't rank it against, like, actual specials.
I agree.
Apples and oranges.
I'm not exactly sure of the parameters, but nonetheless, it got a hefty amount of votes.
That's huge. Yeah. That is huge. It's a cheeky, ironic bunch that made that one win. That's what
it
is.
Yes. Yeah. Yes,
those
it
kids
is.
Who love irony, they were like, tell your friends to vote.
Right. Like, did you know this existed? Mm-hmm. And we will include a link to that in our show notes. So I just want to talk about a couple of crazy TV specials that kind of sum up what I think our generation was used to. And I'm going to start with the Mr. T Christmas special. But this is not the Mr. T we know with the big gold chains and kind of the mohawk hair.
What?
No gold chains.
Oh, he's not Mr. T.
No, he's not Mr. T. Okay, so we meet Mr. T on the street corner as he is a homeless Santa ringing a bell. And Emmanuel Lewis is the one who wanders up to meet this homeless Santa. Whose real name is Teddy, okay? And guess what, Emmanuel Lewis? He has lost the spirit of Christmas. He doesn't believe in it. He doesn't like it.
Of course, yeah.
And Mr. T is just gobsmacked. Like, how on earth can this be? Well, you know what? I'm done with my shift, Webster. I'm going to take you around New York, and I'm going to put this feeling of Christmas back into you. So come on. So sure enough, after Mr. T changes out of a Santa suit, he and Webster hop into one of those horse-drawn carriages in New York City, and they start to go through the city to find all the things that will bring Emmanuel Lewis's heart and make it happy again. First off, they go to FAO Schwartz, and guess who is in there? David Copperfield. David Copperfield is just with F.A.O. Schwartz doing a magic show, which somehow, and it involves a cigarette. It's just bizarre.
In a toy store.
Of course it does.
Yeah. It's in a toy store. Yeah. And he starts to like rekindle maybe the little spirit in Webster, but no, Webster's still, eh. So Mr. T's thinking, I know, we will go down to Rockefeller Center to the ice skating rink, and you will be able to see ice skaters. And there is just, it's Christmas all over. Guess what? Ty Babylonian and Randy Gardner are skating.
Of course they are.
I loved them.
I did not see that coming, but I love that.
Neither did I. I don't think you'll see really a lot of this coming, and I don't think the viewers probably did either. But sure enough, Ty and Randy do a very nice but long routine on the ice. Okay, are we feeling it at all, Webster? Kind of, do you think about it? Well, Mayor Ed Koch comes by to say, come on, Merry Christmas. I think this is also like maybe an ad for New York City at the time because
we all bet it is. Like the Bradys go to Hawaii. Yeah.
Correct.
Especially with the mayor because the mayor's there.
The mayor's there.
It was done in connection with like the Chamber of Commerce or something.
Exactly. And so where else do you think you might need to go, guys, to feel
Radio
the Christmas
City,
spirit?
When
you,
probably.
You
oh,
sure
the Rockettes.
Do.
Yes.
You have
okay.
to go meet the Rockettes. So sure enough, we go and see them. We see them practicing, and then all of a sudden they become toy soldiers, and they do nice little high kicks. Okay. Then it's really getting bleak here, you guys. Are we going to get the holiday spirit into
poor Webster?
Emmanuel Lewis.
What are we going to
well,
do?
Well, if anyone can do it, it would be the sweet voice of Maureen McGovern.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sorry.
Random.
Yes.
What if
random.
She started singing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel?
What?
She pulls that
drop.
One out.
That's right. That's, she does sing three
so
songs,
meta.
But O Come, Emmanuel was not one of them.
Okay, that is a miss. I'm sorry. Can we call up the past and just say that is a huge
yes,
miss?
Because
it's the whole theme of the show.
Exactly.
O Come, Emmanuel, come on.
I think that they totally missed out. Maybe there can be a revisiting of, I don't know, is Mr. T still alive?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
I think
oh, dead
is.
Or not
okay.
Cut down all of his trees on his property in Chicago.
I know. I remember mm-hmm. that in Lake Forest.
Yeah.
Because he had allergies. He had bad allergies.
Oh, that's right.
Is
that's
what
right.
he said. All right. Well, when all else fails, you guys.
I just love how a little trivia nugget that people can take away from this episode after everything said and done is that Mr. T has bad allergies.
Yeah.
Just that was just so random.
Yeah.
But I love
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah.
Before you get too worried, there is the chance that Willie Tyler, the ventriloquist, and Lester, his dummy, might
oh
be able
God.
To do it.
Oh,
no.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. But they don't. Even when Willie what? Brings out his puppet, that is Mr. T. He brings out a Mr. T puppet.
That's very meta.
That is wearing yeah. the chains and mm-hmm. the mohawk and does say something about, what's Mr. T's line again? Take that.
I was say, what you talking about, Willis?
I know.
That too.
It's not that. It's what's but that it's it? Something along those lines.
Where
but we'll
he points
just take
like
that
this.
Out.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Right.
What is? Why can't we come up with this? Is embarrassing.
I don't know. That's going to drive me crazy.
It'll probably
fool.
Come to me at
something
the end.
About fool.
Of, yeah. Yeah. Pity the
yeah.
fool.
Pity the fool. Pity the fool.
Yeah.
Oh, thank
so
God.
So we have.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have our Mr. T puppet saying "Pity the fool" and pointing to Mr. T, not Mr. T,
the Santa, the homeless Santa.
The mm-hmm. homeless Santa. Yeah,
unhoused.
You got it.
Unhoused
so
Santa.
None of that works. We're pretty much at our last straw. Let's head to a little party that Mr. T and his friends are putting together. Let's invite the boys choir of New York. Bring back Maureen McGovern. And you know what? Have Mr. T tell the Christmas story. That's going to do it. And so
like,
sure enough, Mr. T. But no, he's not Mr. T.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He almost
okay.
sounds like Charles Barkley, actually, as I was watching this. But anyway, so he tells the Christmas story. And by the end, lo and behold, the Christmas spirit is rekindled in Emmanuel Lewis. He is happy. We all break out in song. The show ends, and you will never see it again until it comes on YouTube.
I have to ask, did they call it the Mr. T Christmas special?
They did. With
but
Emmanuel
he wasn't
Lewis.
Mr. T. He
correct.
Wasn't Mr. T, but they called right. it the Mr. T. That's just
they
dumb.
Did.
It was a miss because everyone is showing up for the Pity the Fool, and then they get Unhoused Santa, and that mm-hmm. must have been a disappointment.
It might have been, yeah.
And until the puppet Lewis. Came out.
And, right, and they're like, finally.
Right. It was redeemed. But I mean, just if you take, again, these crazy celebrity pairings of Mr. T, I could almost see Mr. T and Emmanuel Lewis. Like, okay, that's kind of mm-hmm. funny, whatever. They're both popular at the
big,
time.
Big, small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole thing. But then you throw in Ty Babylonian, Randy Gardner. And then if that's not weird enough, you got Mayor Ed Koch and then David Copperfield, then the Rockettes, then Maureen McGovern, like for several songs. Willie Tyler and Lester. It was a lot, you guys.
Mm-hmm. It's too much. It's too
so
much.
I guess I have to ask you guys. So this mm-hmm. was in 1984. Were the viewers as amazed with this lineup as we were now watching it? Or were they just like, of course? I mean, were we just used to these kind of crazy mishmash of yeah. celebrities
oh,
in one?
Oh, we were used
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
I think so.
It
absolutely. This was how a TV special went.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now
who
it's hysterical.
Get?
to read those names and say they were all in one program. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, and let's not forget, we're coming off the era from the mid to late 70s of variety shows where we've talked about this, like on the Donna and Marie show. It was just bizarre. I mean, it could be Abe Vigoda and Christy McNichol.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
could just be the weirdest pairing. So I felt like we were kind of used to it.
And it was really about who you could get. It wasn't curated. It was not highly curated. It's like, who said yes?
And, well, yeah, and it's probably
now. Right? Now I think about David Copperfield must have had a fantastic publicist because he's on all these shows. And I don't think it's because everyone loved David Copperfield.
Yeah. We loved magic back then. I mean, when you think about it, there was David Copperfield. There was that weird guy we talk about in the Carpenter's Christmas special.
Yeah, Doug Henning.
Yeah. And we had a real thing for magic. All right. That was crazy, as we said. But I think perhaps the craziest, at least for the three of us, would be what we're going to talk about next. An episode of Dance Fever that we have wanted to talk about for an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
So buckle up, friends, because this is one wild ride.
Christmas. So in January of last year, we released an episode devoted entirely to the dance competition show Dance Fever with Denny Terrio and Motion. Let's not forget Motion. They're super important.
You can't forget Motion.
And we watched a handful of episodes and they were all spectacular. But there was one episode in particular that was so epic, so outlandish. And poor Carolyn was so overcome with what she called the awesome awfulness of this one episode that we couldn't contain her. And I was like, Carolyn, let's do a whole episode on the Dance Fever Christmas special next year. And here we are.
You're welcome.
Yes, you are welcome. It was too good to be a side note. It deserved our full attention. And so we promised our listeners next year, this will be our holiday episode. And here we are.
Oh my God, they've been waiting so long. Yep. You guys, it's now.
It's now. Right now. It's happening.
It's happening. The wait is over. The wait is over, people.
The Dance Fever Christmas special aired in 1980, which is basically the 70s. It's still the 70s. It's still all disco. It's still all Denny Terrio all the time. And every opening of Dance Fever started the same exact way.
Just so everyone knows, Michelle and I are already laughing.
With a giant present. Yeah. You said it all started the same way. My first thought is with one of the Motion girls pantomime or using a giant scissors to cut Denny Terrio out of a box.
So it's just the Christmas special is just an episode of Dance Fever in the same exact format, except with Christmas decorations. And so they open every show with a dance number by Denny Terrio and Motion. And in my notes from watching this yesterday, I wrote, OMG, they're in sacks, like Amazon gift bags. So Motion are tied up in these sacks, and they're wiggling in their bags. Like, they're supposed to be going, like, we're, like, the viewer's supposed to be going, what's in those bags?
Know,
they're
what?
Wiggling. What is it? And then they pop out of the bags like, surprise, it's Motion. And then they dance over to the big giant gift box, not a sack. Denny Terrio gets his own gift box. Yep. And surprise, it's Denny Terrio. And then what happens next really makes me wish that this were a visual medium. I just don't know how to describe the opening choreography. When the box opens, Denny Terrio comes out of the gift box doing that dance that your grandpa used to do.
You know what I called it? And in my notes it says, Denny comes out doing what I can only describe as the Shirley Temple dance move.
Yes, Shirley Temple. Or your grandpa did it. Yes. You put one hand on your hip and then you wiggle your finger in the air.
Like the Good Ship Lollipop.
Yes, the Good Ship Lollipop.
Yes. Yeah.
And then all together, Motion and Denny Terrio do this variation on the twist that looks like something that toddlers do on the dance floor at a wedding.
Yeah,
I'm
absolutely.
Like, that is not choreography. That's, I don't know what you're doing. Okay, then there's some trick photography where you're looking at the face of one half of Motion and then boom, she's wearing a Rudolph nose.
Oh,
and then it happens to both halves of Motion.
Yes.
They're both wearing Rudolph noses.
And they stare.
Yes, they just stare at the camera with their Rudolph nose. And then, I kid you not, Denny Terrio puts a faux harness on them and drives them around the stage. And I'm like, oh, Motion, don't. Don't do this.
I wrote in my notes, then Denny harnesses Motion with what looks like toilet paper. And they trot over to the tree.
Props are so lame.
It literally was like a long strand of toilet paper. And it wasn't even long enough.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And it was going to break. And they're just like pretending to prance like little. It was bad. It's just so bad. And I feel bad for Motion.
Okay, if you remember on the regular Dance Fever episodes, after this opening dance sequence, we would get to meet our judges. And since this is, and I want to say this, they say this probably 10 times during the episode. They call this the first annual Dance Fever Christmas Special.
I wrote that down too, Carolyn.
You're like, really, Danny Terrio?
Planning on having more of these, but unfortunately, that did not happen. A little different spin on this episode, because we don't just have three judges. We actually have six, because we have three judges who bring along their children to help them judge the dances. So we have Robert Blake of Beretta fame, and also he murdered someone, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, it's possibly his wife, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Robert Blake of Beretta fame and his daughter, Delilah, that they called Deli.
Really? Right. I could not figure out what her name was. Yes, and she's wearing she's wearing her classic Danskin leotard with her designer jeans, but I feel so bad. Yes. She's clearly happy to be there, but she's not wearing a bra, and she really looks like she's wishing she had a bra on. Because, you know, they're all dancing, and I'm sorry, Deli. I'm sorry to say this, but I'm just going to – it's just like bouncy, 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 and she knows it. And so she's like kind of like – hunching her shoulders a little bit. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, but exactly.
I actually wrote, this is so funny. You guys listening, understand, we watch these things separately. This is so interesting, but yet we've all kind of developed the same brain for watching, because I also wrote down Robert Blake's 14-year-old daughter in her leotard and jeans, and she had like those, almost like those wooden heels. Those
like candies.
She looked very 14 years old she for did. 1980, but I have two with no bra, which was a mistake.
Yeah,
like,
right.
She thought it was a mistake, but that was the look, you have to say.
Well, exactly.
That was the look.
And if she had been comfortable with it, it can be the times, but she was not comfortable. And I was like, sorry,
I think it was one of those 14-year-old decisions where she's like, I'm going to wear this. This is cool. The other kids that are coming on are much younger than me. I want to look older. And then in that second, when she had to walk out on stage and dance, she regretted it.
She's like, oops, I forgot about the dancing part.
Yes. So listeners, if you remember, when the judges are announced, they dance out.
Uh-huh.
We've got Chad Everett. And Chad Everett's daughter is 9 years old. Her name is Shannon. And they come dancing out. Poor Shannon. I don't think she wanted to be there the whole entire show. Mm-hmm.
She is stiff as a board. And they're supposed to be boogieing down with Danny Terrio. And she even, at one point, she looks behind Chad Everett. I'm like, are you trying to escape? Like, why are you looking behind him?
I think she was trying the whole time. And Chad was looking very Chad. Okay, he has on his, like, kind of...
his photo grays.
Photo
grays. His wire photo gray glasses.
Giants kind of sunglasses kind of thing. And you're thinking, why do you need those? But he always seemed to be in those. His leisure suit. So they do their little dance.
Big sideburns. The giant sideburns.
Oh, yeah.
The hair helmet.
And last was Connie Stevens and her 11-year-old daughter. And they, you know, they did an okay job. I'd totally forgotten about Connie Stevens.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so Connie Stevens, which I loved on every time she was on the Love Boat. But that's Trisha Lee Stevens. First of all, I just have to say that the thing I wrote in my notes is that I would have loved her outfit. And we're the same exact age. So, like, she had the little ribbons in her hair, like the barrette with the long ribbons. Mm-hmm. And her hair was kind of feathered back.
She had a little vest. Didn't she have a vest over her
dress? Yeah, and I looked her up. And you guys, so she is Carrie Fisher's half-sister. And her sister is Jolie Fisher, who you guys might know. She's an actress. And Trisha Lee has also kind of always been, you know, like... C-list singer. She still sings in nightclubs and stuff like that. If you look her up now, Trisha Lee Fisher, I think you would recognize her. Don't you guys think, though, she was darling and very well-spoken?
She was very comfortable on TV in a way that poor Shannon was not. Shannon was like, get me the fuck out of here, Daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing about poor Trisha, though, that I felt so bad about is that she comes out on stage and Denny Terrio does something that looks like it might require consent. Like, he puts his arms around her little body.
Yes.
And you're like, what is he going to do? And Trisha Lee is like, ah, dude, I don't, I'm not supposed to do that.
Well, in 1980, though, you didn't know, right? You just were like,
oh, he dips her. That's right. Yeah. He puts his arms around her and he dips her. And it's just like, he envelops her and she's 11.
We're going to come back to the issue of consent when we talk about Denny's solo later.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Gross. That's our lineup of guest judges. But those aren't our only guests on this
episode.
Oh,
no. We have some guest stars. Of course. Yes. You know, what would a show be in 1980 without an appearance by David Copperfield?
David Copperfield, of course. The PR comes, you know, his publicist is just on fire.
Yeah, but I'm sitting there thinking, does he dance? Like, I thought he's a magician.
No.
How is he on the show?
Right. Exactly. Yes. And then there's always a musical. You know, a musical appearance. Well, it's 1980. We're going to have the Gap Band.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing says Merry Christmas like the Gap Band. And then, I don't know if you guys remember, but we're going to need a guest DJ. And the guest DJ for this Christmas spectacular is Nasty Nellie Olson, as Denny introduces her.
The guest DJ for our special is in her seventh season as Nasty Nellie Olson on Little House on the Prairie. She also is a popular stand-up comedian and is guaranteed to take the chill out of the North Pole. Here's Alison Arngrim.
We cut to Alison Arngrim, who Alison, we love you. But I think even you would look back at this appearance and just kind of laugh and shake your head. But you guys, it looks like someone put Nellie Olson through like a Playboy bunny machine. Like,
that's what
she
it
went
is.
In as Nellie Olson and it spit her out and she is supposed to be like serving drinks at the Playboy bunny club.
It's the Playboy mansion at Christmas. Yeah.
She's got on the strapless white fur trimmed Santa suit with a little mini, like little flared skirt. Her beautiful yellow blonde hair, but like not like we see with Nellie where it's always up in an updo. It's all been hot rollered.
And it's like feathery.
And then feathery. And then the Santa hat just perched so jauntily on top and the bright red lips. And then when she opens her mouth to speak, you wonder if she has like taken a class at the Audrey Landers School of Acting.
Yes.
Because the wide eye.
The eyes.
She looks like Audrey Landers.
Yes, she does.
Nellie.
Mm-hmm. It's just kind of the wide-eyed, kind of clueless expression and breathy voice as she introduces everybody.
It's like she was coached by Denny Terrio.
It really was. And and so, you know what? But in her defense, I will say that it had to have been thrilling to get to break out after 7 years
show
of being
legs.
Nasty Nellie Olson.
Yes.
It had to be thrilling to be able to show that side of yourself.
And you probably are wanting, you know, after 7 years as Nellie Olson, you're probably wondering what kinds of roles will I be able to get in the future? I better show people that I'm a woman.
Yeah.
And so here's my opportunity. And it's just not comfortable for the viewer, maybe because of the fact that we only know her in prairie dresses. But I didn't want it.
I know. But I wonder again, were we like, good for Nellie. Like, oh my gosh, we know Nellie. Or were we like, eek?
We were like, eek.
Then? Yeah.
We were like, what? But again, like, what did we expect? Did we think that she was going to wear a prairie dress wherever she went?
No.
Like, she's a real person.
And that's why I think she was super excited to break that.
For sure. Well, and let's also be honest, like, adolescence is tough, trying to figure out where you are in terms of, am I a woman or a child? I'm a sexual being. How do I do that?
Right.
And you're not exactly sure how to do that. Well, she was giving it her best shot. I mean, it was sexual.
You figured
it was definitely sexual.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, we've got Little House on the Prairie is going to be coming to an end. Denny also mentions the fact that she is a stand-up comedian. So this is when her comedy act is starting to take off. So she really wants probably every opportunity for people to see her visually, obviously see her not in a prairie dress with those ringlets and that kind of thing. So
that's right.
Again,
maybe
what better way to get on the other side?
Maybe it should have been incremental. Like start with like a skirt at your knees.
And
a ponytail
or a unitard. You know what? She could have just worn the red unitard like half the dancers did.
Yep.
And again, Alison, we love you and you're such a part of our growing up. But of all the stars and celebrities of the time, like, I'm just curious how
did that
she
happen?
Got on the radar to be that guest DJ person. I don't know.
She has a good manager.
Mm-hmm.
Good PR person.
Okay, so now it's on to the competition. There are lots of instructions from Denny Terrio. I will say he's a communicator. He wants to make sure that we know all the rules.
Oh, my gosh.
And there
gosh.
Were times
yes,
when I was like, oh, Denny, come on. Wrap it up.
I know.
Let's do this. Yes. And then our contestants will be averaged of the groups of four will data. So we take the scores. After our judges will provide us with four numbers, and the four numbers will go into a giant machine and will come out with a winner.
And then the seniors will dance 1.5 minutes, but the juniors only get to dance 1 minute because they are younger and they can't last as long. And then the choreography of the...
I'm sorry, listeners. I'm having fun. I don't know about you guys, and too bad because this is so funny. Because also he's reading it, you can tell off of like a teleprompter,
yes.
And he would say stuff like, and the scores will be judged by the, like he would end a thing in the middle of the sentence, yeah. Like he thought because the line ended on the teleprompter.
And there's probably, it's probably just cue cards. It probably wasn't a teleprompter.
Oh, no,
they yeah, probably had to change the card.
You're right.
And the numbers will be judged according to the...
Yeah.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by all of those hormonal changes Gen X women are going through? Just because those changes are from natural processes doesn't mean we have to suffer through them. And that's why Kristen, Michelle, and I love Hormone Harmony. It's a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. The three of us have noticed improved sleep quality, gut health, and even our moods have improved. The science-backed herbal extracts in Hormone Harmony called adaptogens help the body adapt to all those hormonal changes that cause those life-disrupting symptoms, like hot flashes and night sweats, bloating and gas. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromises when it comes to quality, and it shows. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony, with one of the biggest benefits mentioned being, I feel like myself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PCPS for 15% off today.
Okay, so our contestants are divided into four groups, the North, the South, the East, and the West. And in each direction, we have an adult couple and a junior couple. That's what's going to differentiate this Christmas special. So Allison, in her little kitteny way, introduces couple number one. She's very provocatively, and oh, her eyes are so wide.
Oh,
where are they from? Well, the people from the North are from Minneapolis.
Of course they are.
Of course they are. It always comes back to Minnesota.
To start things off in the spirit of the season, our Minnesota couple chooses Gloria Medley by the Jokers.
So they come out and they're wearing green unitards and they have a strand of silver garland from Target stapled to their green unitards spiraling down their leg.
Kristen,
did you say from Target?
I say green unitards with tinsel from Walgreens stapled around their torsos.
Yeah, I don't even think it was as upgraded as Target.
I think it was too high class.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
It's like they were on their way to the show and they're driving and then like, we probably should try to up these a little. There's a Walgreens on the corner. Let's go.
Oh, I think it's worse. I think they were backstage and the producer is like, what the hell, you guys? It's a Christmas special. You show up with like unitards on and send some intern to run find some garland at Target.
Where they rip it off like some of the props in the back.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And honestly, the couple from Minneapolis, they look pretty nonplussed by the whole thing. And I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but they kind of look like they learned their routine in an after school program. And then
all they did was spin.
And not very well.
They
couldn't even find each other.
That's all they did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Spin, spin, spin.
And then the junior couple from the North is also from Minnesota.
Yep.
They are from Stillwater, Minnesota. And they also have silver garland stapled to their unitards.
Well, there's a sale. There was a sale in Minnesota.
Right.
It is the land of Target.
They're on their way to the airport. I do want to say, too, that when Allison introduces them, I think she says they're a 12-year-old couple from Stillwater. And then, she kind of says what song that they're going to do. And she said, they're going to take a lover's holiday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No. 12? No, they're 12.
I know.
And because they're 12, the boy is so much smaller than the girl.
So much smaller.
Because one of us has hit puberty and one of us has not. And we're definitely not going to be lovers. So it took me about 2.5 seconds to literally know what dance studio these kids were from.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not even kidding you. 1980, that was my dance prime. And I spent a fair amount of time at dance competitions around the city. And these kids were definitely from the Larkin Dance Studio.
They were?
Yes.
I know Larkin because I spent a lot of years at dance competitions with my daughters.
For sure. I could tell by their body rolls where they would do like their legs wide and then they would go down into a body roll.
Well, I just wrote on my notes, all I wrote is they suck. That's all I wrote.
Oh,
yeah. Sorry. Hey, they're grown up now.
Okay, so now it's time for the couple from the East. They are from New York City, and their names are...
Sorry, okay. We're all laughing because we know it's coming.
Get ready for Michelangelo and the Lady. And they did not practice.
No.
It's like they can't even find the beat when the first song starts. And they're doing the same thing at completely different times. Like they did not practice.
I wrote, not sure they heard their music start.
No.
And then I wrote, are they making this dance up as they go along?
I'm like, you guys got to practice before Dance Fever. It's just like, okay, I was going to say, are you masturbating? Because I just, but it was the wrong person. I had a conversation yesterday and it wasn't with you when we were talking about Deanie.
Deanie? No, yes. I'm scratching my armpit.
So I was like, oh, you're masturbating.
That's what I'm going to say anyway.
Oh my gosh.
That's my story.
All
I'm
of this
sticking
in.
With it.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
Yes, I was scratching my armpit.
Without the visuals, when I say, are you masturbating? I'm sure people get a much different picture.
Thank you for actually, though, then describing what I was doing.
We're all masturbating.
Hands
now.
Up!
So, I mean, across the board, all of these so far, all of these performances are really rough.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, just like me, just like you guys, I think they made these up in their basement. And they've never done it full out because they just don't have that kind of room in their basement. But at the same time, these are true amateurs, right? Not like today where professional dancers are trying out for So You Think You Can Dance. So I appreciate it. I'm here for it. Okay, so then we have the West Coast couple. They are Cookie and Jim. And they wear some gold lamé, lots and lots of gold lamé. And I have in my notes, they're going to win.
Me too.
Yes, they're going to win. They better fucking win because they're the only people who practice.
I write gold lamé Saturday Night Fever dress.
Yeah.
I already like them best. They've got moves. And in all caps, I wrote, they're clearly the winners.
Yeah, they're going to win.
You know why? It was part of it was that gold lamé Saturday Night Fever dress because when she did spins, you got that skirt action. So it actually, it's kind of smoke and mirrors, right? If they are amateurs, you kind of are just watching that beautiful dress.
And they did all of their moves together.
They
realized that's a low bar, that you should do things like synchronized, but they are the only ones who do. And so we're going to give them lots of points for that. But the best part of their routine is right at the end when they take their bow. And Cookie throws her arm out for her bow just as Denny Terrio is coming up on stage. And she essentially thwacks him in the solar plexus. But there's no take two.
No.
They're just like, okay, thank you, Cookie and Jim.
Yeah, but in their defense, he walked up too fast.
He did.
He cut them off.
He prematurely ejaculated.
He deserved to get hit in the solar plexus.
He totally did. Okay, so the junior couple from the West,
they
dance to Hot Lunch Jam, and they do the funniest interpretation of the robot I have ever seen. It is the whitest robot on the planet. Mm-hmm. It's like if a cheerleader did the robot, and I am loving it. And then the boy does a little rerun. He goes to the front, and he's like whacking, whacking. I'm rerun. Yeah. I'm watching.
Did you see him try to do the moonwalk, though?
I missed that.
In the back. Well, you know what? The girl with the unfortunate bangs was in the front doing her little thing.
Yeah.
And he goes to the back because he's already gotten his spotlight with his white boy robot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to the back while the girl with the unfortunate bangs is doing, I don't know, a kick or a spin or a split or something. And he starts moonwalking. It's worth a rewatch.
Oh, my.
It's so bad. It's
well,
like.
Well, I remember seeing it and thinking, this is pre-Michael Jackson doing it, right?
Oh, good point.
I was just going to say 1980.
Well, watch it. He's trying to moonwalk.
So whatever rerun
whatever he's doing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's working on it. Maybe it wasn't a moonwalk at all. It was something else. And that's why I just thought it was such a bad moonwalk.
And he just didn't do it very well.
Maybe Michael Jackson was watching the Dance Fever Christmas
and he
episode
stole it from the junior dancer from the West doing Hot Lunch Jam.
He looked felt like Jimmy Osmond when I first saw him.
Oh, he is. Yeah. He is 100% Jimmy Osmond. And the girl then, after a rerun and bad moonwalk, she does a one-handed cartwheel. And I was like, I'm so there. And it's super funny, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I rewound it and I watched it again. Okay, so then the couple from the South. The couple from the South does a disco interpretation of the Charleston, and he's wearing those skin-tight spandex pants with pockets, and they do the White Robot, too, with a little of Laurel and Hardy thrown in.
I'm sorry, they look like Shields and Yarnell.
They totally did.
And did you notice in his back pocket of his spandex, he had a little white pocket square?
In the back.
In the back pocket.
Well, that is disco.
And also, didn't you guys think that when they look like when they're not dancing, they probably both sell insurance?
Oh, absolutely. Maybe or work in a bank. It could be like Amway. She probably does Amway on the side too. Well, and the junior couple are wearing cowboy hats because they're from Dallas.
Yeah.
And they make lots of finger guns.
Finger guns. I have that written down too.
Yeah.
I have.
Because in Texas, they shoot guns. Yeah.
Are they not dancing to like Little Drummer Boy or something? I think they're dancing to like a Christmas, you know, like a kind of hymn-y
a disco
thing.
A disco hymn. They're dancing to a disco hymn
and they're
doing finger
guns. Fingers.
Yes. And all this is just proof that you can make anything disco.
Well, I was really uncomfortable watching them, and I feel like it had a lot to do with the constant use of finger guns. But then at the end, they do that whole, like, she does, like, the whole, you know, the cartwheel into splits, which is the big move by the juniors. Mm-hmm. But over her in the back, he's doing, like, that kind of horsey, like,
whipping
but now
the
people kind of do it as, like, a sexy dance, and I had to look away.
Because they're children. Remember, this is the junior couple. Yeah. And so he's like 12 and he's smacking her ass. Okay. So after that, we didn't have a place in the outline for this, but we just have to talk about Denny Terrio's solo for a minute.
Please.
It's mostly him hiding behind giant candy canes. And it is reminiscent of the Dance Fever episode we did previously where he danced mostly hiding behind a jukebox. His thing. He can't decide what to do, and so he hides behind a big thing. I really don't think he choreographs this. And I think he improvises the whole thing because all he does is string together all of his signature moves. And he kind of pauses in between. Like he'll do whacking, then stop. Oh, do a half split.
No, he does this.
Then stop.
Kristen, I swear to God, we have the same brain when we're watching this. Because my notes say Danny Solo hiding behind candy cane, almost pulls over a candy cane. Again, looks like he's making up this dance on the spot, freestyling it. And he just does those Russian splits. Isn't that what they're called? Where you go down on your knees and then pop back up and you're on your heels.
He's doing
down
nutcracker, and up and down. Nutcracker knees.
Nutcracker. Yeah, like in the Nutcracker. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does it like 20 times and that's all he does. And it's exactly like that episode with the jukebox because we wonder too, he's improvising this.
He's sitting behind the jukebox trying to figure out what he's going to do.
Well, and in this one,
the camera's rolling.
He's back behind the candy cane and he pops out like, hello.
Yeah.
And then the candy canes like jiggle. And I'm like, oh, good Lord, they're coming down like dominoes pretty soon.
Yep. And that is not part of the act. And they're not going to do a second take. But here's the part where we need to chat a little bit.
Oh, God.
Then he grabs a prop from under the Christmas tree, the Dance Fever Christmas tree, and he grabs a bag, and he opens the bag, and he goes out into the audience, which, by the way, is very small. It's like 45 people. And he starts handing out candy canes a la Santa Claus. And everyone who gets a candy cane also gets a big kiss on the lips.
Except for the last lady who was treated to Denny Terrio humping over her head.
Oh, my God.
Humping his hips, like, at her head.
Yes.
Because she's like, now picture, she's sitting below him because she's in, like, a theater seat. Hands her a candy cane and then does the hip thrust right at her head.
It's so gross. And it's not like when we're talking about kissing on the lips, we're not talking Richard Dawson
it's
not a peck. It's not where he's leading with the lips and they come here. No, it's like he's like grabbing their head and smashing his face into their face. It's bad. Denny, you need to ask. None of those people wanted that.
It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah, they all looked very surprised. Like, you know, when Jimmy Fallon goes into the audience or something, those people know that they're going to be asked a question or that they're part of the gig. I don't think anyone knew what was happening to them.
They had no idea.
Well, it was kind of Denny's thing. Remember, he always kisses the member of Motion who brings him the
results.
The results. And then sometimes if there's a woman guest, like a celebrity guest, at the beginning when they're dancing out, he'll spin her to him and he'll kiss her on the lips before he spins her out.
And I was so nervous when they brought those kids out because I knew that was his shtick. And when he grabs on to Connie Stevens' daughter, I'm like, do not kiss her mother.
Yeah, it was a different time, man.
Mm-hmm.
It sure because was. I don't think that necessarily shocked us. When
oh,
we were
absolutely
it.
Not. Yeah. Absolutely not. It did not.
I mean, we're coming off, you know, Ice Castles where we and everybody else thought it was great for the, 35-year-old, you know, newscaster to date the 16-year-old ice skater and kiss her in public.
Mm-hmm. And it's clear they're sleeping together.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, we can't forget, you know, our special guest star, David Copperfield, who, according to Denny, David Copperfield, who is called by one New York newspaper, the greatest magician in the world. That's really an impressive, it's probably one of those free papers that, because he just says, he doesn't name it. By
it's
one
the newsletter for an apartment building.
Yeah. So this is a young David Copperfield. No matter what era of David Copperfield, a lot of people think he's gorgeous, but to me, he's just got those kind of creeper piercing, little black teddy bear eyes and the pointy nose. Anyway, so settle in because apparently it's story time before we're going to start magic. And right away, you guys, it's creepy. He says, when I was in high school, I sat next to this girl. And even though she never noticed me, in my imagination, we were madly in love. And after my last TV special, she sent me this letter and she finally noticed me. And I went up to my attic and found her picture and some of her fingernail clippings. Kidding. He didn't really say that. But he didn't have
but
to.
But it's feeling like that. It is definitely
that was implied,
feeling like that.
Because this is what I'm feeling. Yeah. If he would have said, and her fingernail clippings, I would not have been surprised. Because this is the feeling I'm getting from this story, right? And it brought back a lot of memories. So I'm already way disturbed by this story, but I love magic, so I keep watching. And he goes, memories are so important because sometimes they're all you have. And as Barry Manilow's Weekend in New England starts, and I'm already don't denigrate this song,
I know,
David.
I know.
How did Barry let that happen? Doesn't he have to say, okay?
We're treated to a silent pantomime of David, and he's looking at her picture of who we are to believe is the girl he was madly in love with in his imagination.
Mm-hmm.
She comes out and embraces him. And then suddenly she's his magician's assistant.
And it's creepy the way she, the camera is on him. And then you just see her hands
it's
with
sexual.
The painted fingernails come down his chest.
Yes.
And you're like, what's
sexual.
Happening? Mm-hmm. Is it the ghost of Christmas past?
Like, well, Barry is playing in the background. Like, just let's not forget that.
It's Barry Manilow.
Barry and my favorite song, Weekend in New England, are playing.
You know what else is in the background? It's like a 6-point buck. Did you notice that?
Oh, they had it. Yeah, they have the whole set decorated like we're in his attic. Because don't forget, he says, I just will always go back to this part. And even though she never noticed me, in my imagination, we were madly in love. I'm like, he's going to cut her in half, but it's not going to be magic.
Right.
He's going to actually
it's
cut
not in
her
half. It's going to be four or five pieces and put it in his trunk.
They do some fairly lame magic, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And eventually she ends up climbing on a table, covering herself with a sheet. And I was nervous, you guys, because did you notice it doesn't go all the way to the floor?
Yes,
and I was like, oh my God, we're about to see how it works. No, she adjusts it. She kind of wiggles in there. And then, of course, he makes her disappear. He pulls the sheet off and she's gone. I don't know. The real question to me is, was she even there? Was this all supposed to just be in his imagination?
Existential.
It really was the perfect routine for the bizarreness of this whole show.
Yeah.
If he would have come out and done really great, classy, some really impressive magic, we might have been like, well, what are you doing on this show?
Yeah,
right. But no, one New York newspaper has claimed him the greatest magician ever.
Well, you know what else, though? As I'm watching it, I'm thinking, this show doesn't need magic. Like, why?
No, it went on forever.
It just stopped the show cold. It's a dance competition show, and we don't need something to stop it in the middle. There's nothing that has to do, like, music makes sense because you need music to dance. You don't need magic to dance. So this is just stopping the action. It was too long. It was interminable.
Maybe this was the beginning of the end of his career, because then a couple years later, of course, we get him in Mr. T's Christmas special.
Oh, God. You know,
with Webster.
That's true.
And a cigarette in F.A.O. Schwartz.
Well, so after the magic, we have the musical performance, which does make sense because you do need music to dance. And you also have the Gap Band, which is music that you would even dance to. So it actually makes sense. But what I'm thinking as I'm watching this performance by the Gap Band, they sing Party Life, by the way, which is an awesome song. I'm thinking, I really miss lip syncing. I love the segment on a show where it's like a whole band, but there are only three people there. But you have the whole full orchestration, and they're just jamming out. They're just jamming and singing, and then the music fades out, but they're still jamming. Yeah, yeah. They're still doing something, but there's no music. It's over. They just faded it out. I just really miss that.
And I love the Gap Band. That's
I love the Gap Band.
College soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Love, love, love.
Mm-hmm. And they do just kill it. And they're so sparkly. And they look great in front of a Christmas tree. So this pairing really works. And also, they cut it really short. They don't do the whole song. Because, of course, they fade it out like halfway in the song.
They started to run out of time because of the David Copperfield.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because of, Imaginary Girl.
That ridiculous. Yeah. So after we hear the Gap Band, the adults and the kids are going to dance together.
Like, they're one last look at the team from the West. And they all four come out together. And they do, like, what's maybe 15 seconds that ends up in a bow. Right?
Yeah. Okay. It's one minute. They get 1 minute.
Yeah. So they dance together. So now we've got the adult men picking up the little girls and spinning them and, you know, this kind of stuff where they all kind of switch partners. Mm-hmm. The team from Texas, though, really blew my mind because were they lip syncing to the Chipmunks? They were dressed as dolls.
Yes, they were.
But they were dressed as dolls, not chipmunks.
Yes. Like, and they spend like the first 30 seconds just mouthing the monologue of Alvin the Chipmunk.
Yeah.
They take up half of their routine time just mouthing the words.
It was very confusing.
Before they start dancing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bizarre. All of those to me were a little bit bizarre, and I think it was because we had these adult men lifting these young girls at times and doing things that just did not sit right. Not to mention like the height difference and stuff, but that just kind of creeped me out a little. But it was the judges' last opportunity to get to see the dancers in action before we were going to get the final scores.
Mm-hmm. I do have to say, though, at one point, watching the judges give the scores with their kids, there is a variation in how comfortable those kids are. And Chad Everett was like, Shannon, you got to speak up. And Shannon would not look up. Shannon's like, we gave them a 90.
I thought all the kids were really well spoken, and I thought that they did a good job instead of just saying, like, we liked them. They would be like, well, they had great showmanship, and they looked like they were having a lot of fun and whatever. But also,
I
was like, why are you giving them a 92? They should get like a 60.
Yes, well, I totally agree.
The variations in the score, you know, it would be like Robert Blake saying, we thought their costumes were great and their act was great. We give them a 96. And then Chad Everett would be, they were good. They had great personality. We give them an 84. There would be like these huge discrepancies.
No rhyme or reason to the scoring at all.
And then did you notice at one time, this is neither here nor there, but it's just something that really stood out to me. So at one point, Robert Blake leans back and it looks like he's tickling his nipples.
What?
And he's just doing this. He's just circling his nipples. And I figured out what he's doing is he's playing with the buttons on the pockets on his shirt. And I'm like, somebody tell Robert Blake to stop tickling his nipples. He's like talking. It's like almost like a nervous habit. He's talking and tickling his nipples.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
And I thought poor Deli in her leotard or dancing leotard with her bouncy boobs is probably like, Daddy, stop it.
Oh, you guys, I just have to say the joy for me was watching this, anticipating what Kristen and Michelle would say, as I said earlier. I look like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer right now because I've been laughing so hard. My nose has been running the whole time. I can't.
I will watch dance shows all damn day and write up critiques of them. I love it. Mm-hmm. Especially where they're crap. Because like you said earlier, Kristen, we're used to now watching even a Dancing with the Stars when the people mm-hmm. can't dance. And if it's like some NFL player or whatever who can't even like get the beat, you've got their pro with them. So at least that's you've right. got someone who I enjoy watching or whatever. And then I'm just shocked at the level, the low level of ability.
On TV.
And, like any of these people, like when they would do a kick, their kick wouldn't even make it to their waist.
No, and their feet would be all flexed.
Point your toe. Yeah,
yes, I'm like, there's no pointed toes anywhere. Yeah. No pointed toes.
I mean, their leaps were just crap. Yeah.
It was hilarious.
Well, and I got the impression the way that Denny was kind of introducing them is like they're representing, like they won their... the West. Like there was a competition out in the West right. before they even
this
got
is the best
here.
Of the
yes.
West.
Yes, it's the best. Right. Yes, they won their spot. They didn't like show up and say, "Can I be on Dance Fever?" They won that spot. Right. Somebody was worse than them.
That's right. A lot of people probably. Oh. But mm-hmm. you know, they want the $7,500 cash
yes.
prize for the adults. The poor kids, they only get a $2,000 savings bond.
A savings bond.
As anyone who's ever had a savings bond, you know it takes forever for it to yeah. be worth the face value of it.
Mm-hmm. So now we're at the end of the show when it's time to reveal the results. And even though the judges are like, 94 for those people who can't dance, still, Michelle and I, our predictive abilities yeah. are really strong. And the people mm-hmm. from California, from the West, and the Gold Lame, they do actually win. The juniors and the seniors, they win together. And this is expected. But they didn't expect it. Like, they thought maybe the green unitards with the garland from Target might actually win. And that signifies to me a self-esteem problem. But they are so excited. They are jumping so hard. They're going to take down poor Danny Terrio.
Yes. Like, they won the Showcase Showdown on Price is Right.
Oh, my God.
That had a car in it and
yes.
a hot tub.
And then this is really bothersome. The little girl from the junior team, she jumps up and she's trying to kiss Danny Terrio on the lips. I'm worried about her. There was so much kissing. And not only am I worried about the fact that she's trying to kiss Danny Terrio and he's the one struggling to get away, but I'm worried that somebody's going to bash their teeth. Like she's going to break her
teeth.
Oh,
they're so excited. Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, honey, stop trying to kiss Danny Terrio.
Yeah.
It was
bad. Yeah. He would have done it.
But it was like there was a moment Danny Terrio figured out that I'm not supposed to kiss 12-year-olds. And so he's like trying to move away from her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some court sanction that has told him that probably from about 1978.
Right.
Hey, we should ask Allison Arngrim if we ever get her on the show if he tried to kiss her.
Yes.
He did. I thought that in the end, didn't he kiss her in the
kisses him. She does.
Oh,
she runs up.
Okay.
So Nellie Olson runs up in her Santa outfit and she throws her arms around him and she shows off her little buns because her Santa skirt jumps up and you can see her red Santa underwear and her buns peeking out. And she just like
Yeah. And so then I think fake snowfalls. We're all so happy. I think the judges come up on the stage. We're all dancing. Yeah. Allison comes out from behind somewhere and the credits roll. But they remind us time and time again, like, stay tuned for next year when it's going to be the second annual Dance Fever Christmas special. I mean, they really thought this was a franchise.
Was there a second?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No.
I think somebody had the just wherewithal or something to say this sucked and you're not ever doing this again and we're putting this in a vault and locking it away and throwing away the key, but yet welcome the internet. And poor Allison, she was probably thought this was long gone and she'd never have to think about it again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Allison loves it. I bet
I bet
she
loves
has such
it.
A great sense of humor and
well,
she's so funny and she's so self-deprecating but in a funny way. Like she, you know, she obviously is a whole one-woman show, basically,
right.
you know, poking fun of herself on Little House on the Prairie. But I think she would think that was hilarious to watch.
Well,
and it is
that.
A part of her development, really. I mean, God bless her. Nobody wants to be Nellie Olson forever. That's a big problem. How is she going to get out of that situation? And here was a way out.
Yeah.
There you go.
We understand, Allison. We totally understand. Okay, can we just say that this very special holiday episode of Dance Fever ranks as one of the most perfect examples of late 70s, early 80s culture that we have on film? The reason it's so fun to talk about these things is because it was kind of a ridiculous time. The whole era had so much ridiculousness to it. The silk pants and the giant mustaches, the performative sexuality, the very earnest lip syncing to songs that are clearly performed to the full orchestra. I mean, and do we remember these things fondly? Oh, hell yes.
Yes.
Did we know they were ridiculous at the time? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. But if we are to be true Gen Xers, we have to own the absurdity and love it for what it is. I don't want a picture-perfect childhood. I want a childhood with people in spandex lip-syncing to the Chipmunks. That is a good childhood right there. Are we making fun of Dance Fever? Absolutely. But would we want to live in a world without Dance Fever? Never.
No.
Never. Thank you so much for joining us today. Have a very merry holiday season, and we will see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening today, and thank you to our wonderful, wonderful supporters on Patreon. You guys, we honestly could not do this without them. And I know we sound like a broken record, but we have to say it every time because it's so true. We owe all of this, well, to us, but also, no, but they help us in so many different ways, not just by their listening support, but by their monetary support. And we thank them so much. Today, we are giving a special shout out to Joanna, Donovan, Magdalena, Sandy, Mike, Alice, Alyssa, Miriam, and Linda.
Wow. Thanks, you guys, so much. That means a lot to us.
Thank you so much to all of you. In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of our old pals from the Regal Beagle in Santa Monica, California, to good times.
To happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Cheers. Cheers.